This is The Topic is Trek, episode 95, for Friday, July 9th, 2021. Coming up in this episode, a flute brings in the loot. Tis the season. Tied up timelines, all that and more coming up now on The Topic is Trek. If you see Deep Space 10, you've gone too far. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. Wow. So on our Zoom chat here, we have special effects going on. It's fantastic. But we don't have a video version of the show, so we're just going to go with the audio.
Yet.
Oh, boy.
Fair enough. Well, my name is Clinton, and I am one of your co-hosts here on The Topic is Trek, but I certainly couldn't do this show without some co-hosts. Otherwise, I would not be a co-host. You see how this works? So beaming in to join me from parts unknown throughout the galaxy someplace is Mr. Craig Stepp.
This is Sparta.
Wow, that is so off. So off. The catchphrase is just getting more afield.
Come on, I worked hard on that one.
I'm sure you
did. Actually remember I saved it from last time.
That's how bad it is. We've got leftovers now.
And you've heard the voice, so let me introduce to you the other co-host, Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Eugene Chaffa.
Watch your language.
I went to school with him, Eugene Chaffa.
I did not know that.
Isn't that what's his name from The Lion King? Jafar.
Jafar? Yeah. No, wrong movie. Wow, that was Aladdin. That was Jafar's first name, Eugene.
Oh, yeah.
So near and yet Jafar. Okay, so.
Whatever you say, your wickedness.
Hey, by the way, I liked watching Chuck's wheels turn, trying to figure out. Oh, wait, wrong movie.
Compute.
One of those Disney movies with a princess.
It was like.
Woman coordinates.
Searching.
So I'm going to start off with a question for you guys. What do you think about this? The topic of this show is The Topic is Trek, but this new Star Wars series Visions, which is an anthology series featuring 9 short films from noted anime studios and filmmakers. Does it sound a bit like, oh, I don't know, Short Treks, perhaps?
Could be.
Well, you know what it reminded me of is, if you remember a while back, The Matrix had those anthologies. Yeah, there was a DVD that came out and it had like 6 or 8 little shorts like that, varying styles. That's exactly what it reminded me of. And of course, the Short Treks too, because, you know, had different directors doing their different things. And I like that kind of stuff. I think it worked well with The Matrix and the Short Treks. So I'd love to see. I would love to see anime style Star Trek.
Yes.
I think that would work.
Why? I wonder if it exists out there someplace. It's just like a fan thing or something. You have to look that up.
Well, just like they're reimagining some of the Star Wars stuff, the characters. And so I would love to see that in a Star Trek setting.
I'm sure if you checked every filmmaker's final project class, the students have to make some short film. Several of them have picked Star Wars or Star Trek.
I'm sure they have. There's another story that I couldn't really fit into a regular news section, but you know, we've talked about Section 31 and when is that going to happen? Mm-hmm. But well, the lead on that potential show, Michelle Yeoh, has been pretty busy lately. She's joined the cast of the Netflix The Witcher prequel series.
Yeah, right.
She's got a role in the Avatar movies that are being filmed, and she's also in the Marvel Cinematic Universe now.
The John Cameron Avatar or the Airbender Avatar?
No, the John Cameron Avatar. So she could be that. What is that? Like they're filming 47 movies, I think, for that one at the same time.
I think it's taken them 20 years to make them.
Yes, exactly.
Well, only slightly slower than George R.R. Martin.
Yeah, it's a race to see who'll finish last.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like the Mad Magazine game where you have to lose all your money.
All right. All that said, it's time to open up our subspace chatter section. But of course, we cannot do that without permission. So we're going to check with Charlie. Charlie, are we all set for subspace chatter?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
So that's a go. All right.
Yeah, full steam ahead.
We're using that negative philosophy against him.
That's right.
So take us away, Chuck.
Well, it may have just been an offhand comment, but a tweet by Guardians of the Galaxy star Dave Bautista has caught the attention of Star Trek fans. He was having a Twitter conversation with the website Culture Crave about the idea of theoretically being in a film with Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson and John Cena?
Cena.
Bautista replied that he'd prefer to do his own thing and not get lumped in with the other wrestlers. That's when freelancer writer Jay Stobie, who has published articles on StarTrek.com, among other places, chimed in saying he'd love to see Bautista add Star Trek to his credits. The actor replied, "Likewise, I was born to be a Klingon. Just saying." To be clear, Bautista was not, as some sites have reported, pushing to be a cast on Trek. Call this morning of an inspirational, I'm not sure if our punctuation is off a little bit there, but call it more of an inspirational goal. But we hope that the powers that be were taking notes. I'm going to think about this and say, yes, I would like to see it as long as he doesn't do it in the character of Drax. We don't Klingon.
Very confusing to do that.
Why is that Klingon just standing there? He's trying to be invisible.
It's a strange color and everything. So I'll get Alex Kurtzman on the phone right now. So Dave, you're in. So
he has my vote. I think he'd be, just to see some really bulked up Klingons, I think it would make him even more terrifying.
Yeah. Oh, I like Dave Bautista anyway, so I think.
Of course, he'd have to have other ones around him, so you have to have a whole battalion of that kind of.
Well, that's when you tell, "Hey, Rock, get on my Star Trek show."
Yeah, see,
follow me.
Klingon that does the.
And the Rock goes, "I've already been on Star Trek." Wah, mic drop.
As a Klingon, not as a Klingon.
That's right. Yeah, he was. So anyway, while that story isn't exactly about Star Trek, it is about one of the best non-Star Trek Star Trek movies ever made. It's an interview with the UK Times. Emmy-winning writer-producer Georgia Pritchett revealed that she is working on a project with Star Trek actor Simon Pegg. And what is the project, you ask? A television spinoff of the 1999 sci-fi comedy Galaxy Quest. In the past, trying to bring the NSEA Protector and its crew out of dry dock has proven to be a challenge. In an attempt by Amazon failed, that project would have seen the original cast passing off the show to a new generation of actors, another next generation,
like
I would say.
Star Trek Generations.
Yeah. An idea inspired by the 2009 Star Trek film. As recently as March of this year, Sigourney Weaver said the project had been in mothballs since 2016, of the passing of Alan Rickman. So no additional details were provided by Pritchett.
Okay. And we will be talking about this a little bit later in the show. So keep that in mind, because there will be a quiz on that at the end of the show. All right. As part of the latest auction conducted by the Prop Store Auction House, a special musical instrument was placed up for bids. Yep. The Resican flute Captain Jean-Luc Picard played in the TNG episode The Inner Light went on the block during the Entertainment Memorabilia Live auction.
Again? I thought that was like Christie's or somebody did that when they cleared out the warehouse.
Again.
But I should mention that. The flute, which was previously sold by the renowned auction house Christie's. So there we go.
See, I'm not as crazy as you think I am.
But that's what you get from missing the staff meetings. Anyway, it was targeted to fetch as much as $70,000 at the auction. When the smoke cleared, and I guess the gavel fell, the flute actually sold for $190,000.
Where's Eric's?
Exactly, Eric's. The winner received the... No, this is no laughing matter. The winner received the flute and flute case from the episode, as well as the costume continuity script used on set during the filming.
Did you say flute case? Isn't that what you get at Christmas and nobody eats them? They just pass them around?
No, not a fruit cake.
Oh,
a flute case.
Yeah, I got to get my hearing aids back from Miracle Ear.
And take those bananas out of your ears. Anyway, other Trek items sold during the auction also fetched prices well above estimates. For instance, a copy of the 1969 Star Trek Concordance fanzine signed by most of the original cast, as well as Gene Roddenberry, Matt Jeffries, and others, was expected to sell for about $700. The winner paid $1,300. That's almost twice the estimate.
Wow.
But that's not to say all things Trek made it rain cash. Among items that did not make minimum bid and
a ball tribble sold.
Well, no, actually a tribble did sell and did sell well, but the EMH Doctor's mobile emitter did not meet minimum bid.
It's like,
nor did a complete Riemann costume from Star Trek Nemesis. I can't imagine why people wouldn't just be all over something from Nemesis.
Yeah, hey, it smells like Tom Hardy.
I would wear it on the cruise.
I don't think it's very breathable. Keep that in mind.
Well, yeah. I'm definitely not wearing it to Atlanta.
You can't go outside in it. You can stay in the air conditioned area only, maybe.
Well, speaking of air conditioning, that's of course you need it in summertime.
And nothing says it's summer like Hallmark making an announcement about Christmas ornaments, of course.
Of course.
Kazing! Didn't see that one coming right out of left field. It's this case we're talking. In this case, we're talking about a limited edition version of the HMS Bounty. Yes, that famous Klingon bird of prey from Star Trek for the voyage home. You know why? Because it's the 35th anniversary of that movie. Don't we all feel old now?
No, I felt old this morning when I got up out of bed.
Now?
Yeah. Well, the ornament will be available online in connection with two conventions, San Diego Comic-Con, of course.
Comic-Chameleon.
Yeah. Well, known again this year as Comic-Con at Home. Oh, ouch. They didn't make it. July 23rd through 25th and New York Comic-Con October 7th through 10th. The metal keepsake ornament in green with silver and red accents, including McCoy's hand-painted HMS Bounty right on the belly of that thing. Well, it has a price tag of $35 and will have a production run of just 3,750 units. After that, look for it on eBay near you or at one of those Christie's auctions for about $70,000.
That's right. That's right. So get your bid-ins early on that one.
That's right. Hey, and it may sound like science fiction, but actress Nichelle Nichols will soon christen the Federation headquarters.
In San Francisco?
No.
Oh.
They couldn't afford it. In what is to be her final public appearance, Nichols will be in Huron. Ohio.
Huron. Huh? As in Lake Huron. Huron, Ohio.
That's what I said.
Huron.
I am Huron!
That's her race.
Enjoy the show, folks. Anyway,
we are just slipping.
Whatever. Ohio on September 10th through the 12th. There, in addition to meeting with fans, she will help open the new headquarters of the International Federation of Trekkers.
Wait, it's in Ohio. That means it's not too far from where they're building the Millennium Gate, right? From Voyager.
Mm.
One of Janeway's ancestors. Never mind.
Okay.
Mere coincidence?
Episode name 1159, season 5.
According to the group, the Federation is the only Star Trek fan club founded with approval of series creator Gene Roddenberry. After 36 years of service, the organization moved into its new facilities in the fall of 2020.
Bad timing.
While at the Federation headquarters, Nichols will sign autographs and pose for photographs with fans and in a replica of Captain Kirk's chair on the Enterprise Bridge. An opportunity to have dinner with Nichols will also be available. All proceeds from the meet and greet will benefit Nicole's retirement fund.
All right. And I was not, I mean, probably
you're not invited.
It was
retirement fund. She's retiring a bit late.
I was seemingly unaware of this organization. I mean, I'm familiar with Starfleet and wanted, but the International Federation of Trekkers, did that name ring a bell with either of you guys? I mean,
no.
It's been around for a long time.
The Real World Federation headquarters? Nope.
News that's a new one for me. Yeah.
So I don't know. I may try to get in touch with them and find out what they're all about.
Maybe we should get them on the show.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Tell us what you're all about.
Alfie. If one of them's Alfie, that would just be perfect for that. So that'd be great. All right. And finally.
And I'm the one making obscure references.
Yes.
You're right.
And finally, we've all thought about the concepts of time travel, mirror universes, or alternate timelines in Star Trek, but probably not as much as Rick, creator of the Certifiable In-Game YouTube channel. Attempting to create a definitive timeline of the Trek universe, Rick kept bumping into those pesky forks in the road.
Oh my.
Does the timeline even exist at all if characters keep going back and forth, overriding other events? Star Trek Enterprise's temporal Cold War is just one example of this. Does the Zindi attack on Earth create a parallel timeline? It doesn't seem to, but it also does not appear to change the future, even though the temporal agent says the attack should not have happened. As the author continues to dissect these conflicts and interwoven concepts, he ponders the DS9 episode, Trials and Tribulations, and wonders what happened to the crewmen that were replaced by Bashir and O'Brien in the lineup of crewmen Captain Kirk questioned about the bar fight.
They just gave him a hypo spray in the neck and laid him down in the corridor.
That's right.
He also touched on why it's pointless to argue as to whether or not Discovery should exist in the same timeline as Enterprise or TOS. And you'll understand because we have a link in the video over in the show notes for episode 95 over at thetopicistrek.com.
I watched this. It is brilliant.
It gets more complex and more convoluted.
Yeah. It harkens to Mystery Science Theater where they just say, just repeat to yourself, it's just a show. I should really just relax.
Yeah.
And we have no news out of Vulcan, Alberta, Canada, but we've sent off another sensor probe and we'll let you know what happens. Now, we've covered a bunch of stories here, but we have 43 additional stories broken out by series and movies and other categories. And you can find all of that over at The Topic is Trek.
Ding. Wrong button. Off by one.
Hey, I don't see any news for the Final Frontier. So,
you can't have everything. If they don't have a story about it, I can't put a story in. I can make up a story, but I don't think you'd like that story, especially about Star Trek V, The Final
Frontier. We used the story for The Voyage Home.
Oh, okay. All right. But that wraps up.
Hey, by the way, you even got categories where comics and graphic novels, Paramount Plus news,
toys,
and so on and so forth. Yeah, toys,
video games. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them have stuff in them.
Nothing new on Nemesis.
No, sorry. Well, I could have put in the story about the costume not selling, I suppose. But.
Hey, I thought there was some news here about the new Star Trek movie because there's no spacing in there. It says Star Trek, untitled Star Trek movie premiering in 2023. Star Trek and Dr. Seuss mesh up. It's
Hey now.
Boop. There we go.
All right, so you can check out all those stories and it'll keep you busy until our next episode. So now, as we all know, this is my favorite part of the episode because I get to say goodbye, Charlie.
I want to stay.
Thank you, Eric. We all feel the same way.
That's right.
All right. Now it's time to head out on our main mission with the appropriate sound effect.
We need more Eric's clips.
Well, we can get some more of those. We can make that happen. All right. And this time we're talking about episodes 2 and 3, or 3 and 4, depending on how you look at the two-part opener of Enterprise. But these two episodes, we're going to give you some facts and figures and a synopsis, and then we're going to talk about both of these episodes together. So Chuck, that, start us off.
Yeah, Rick didn't even talk about the episode numbers on Enterprise.
No, he'd be over the top. That'd just be too much.
That's right.
And then let me tell you about this. All right. The first episode is called Fight or Flight, which first aired on October 3rd, 2001. Written by, of course, the series creators Rick Berman and Brandon Braga. Directed by Alan Croker.
And here's a brief synopsis. It has been about 2 weeks since Enterprise set off on its mission of exploration. The crew is growing restless. So far, the only thing they have to show for their travels is Sluggo, an alien life form that resembles a banana slug. Ensign Sato is having second thoughts about accepting her position as communications officer on the ship. The Enterprise encounters the spacecraft of an unknown species and discovers the entire crew has been murdered.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun.
And our second episode is Strange New World, not to be confused with Strange New Worlds. That's
plural.
This aired first on October 10th, 2001. It was written by Mike Sussman and Phyllis Strong with a story by Rick Berman and Brandon Braga and directed by David Livingston.
Here's a brief synopsis of that episode. The Enterprise discovers what appears to be a previously unexplored planet. Lush, green, but devoid of any intelligent life. That sounds like this podcast.
Hey!
I resemble that remark.
Against the advice of Sub-Commander T'Pol, Captain Archer authorizes an away team. Most of the team, including T'Pol, Mayweather, Trip, and crewman Ensign Cutler and Ethan Novakovich, ends up spending the night on the surface. But one by one, they begin to believe that they are not alone on the planet.
Mwah, ha, ha.
Mwah, right, ha, ha.
Wow. Exactly. I think that was that one of the creatures that the Trip was seeing, I think, making that.
Well, he
was
tripping for one reverb use.
Well, Trip was tripping.
Yeah, wasn't he?
So first off the bat, my first observation about these two episodes is I thought it was interesting that they aren't Archer-centric episodes.
Nope.
They're everybody else-centric.
Yep.
Well, sort of.
I mean, really, one of your main storylines in the first one is about, Hoshi Sato.
Yeah.
And then the second episode, it really is a character study of these, people and their fears and hallucinations and, where does it drive them to? And yes, Archer is involved with both of them, but you just don't think of them as the primary driver.
He's involved. He's involved as far as moving the story along and showing that there's still friction between him and T'Pol, because every time she makes a recommendation, like, we should send down probes and study this for a few days, like, heck with you. I mean, she's not even finished with her sentence and he's saying, fire up the shuttle pod.
And he's always wrong.
Yes. Yeah, it's to show how little we Earthlings actually know about what's going on out there.
Yeah, so we're talking about both episodes. We're going to go in order, guess, right?
Yeah, we just... Because they're two different things.
Fight or flight. Different. Back to Sluggo. Yeah.
Okay, well, what I was going to say was I thought in some ways Archer was way too dismissive as a captain to just take her recommendations or whatever and just throw it out flagrantly. It's like, what's the point of her being on the ship if you're going to dismiss? Like, oh, come on. What's the worst that could happen?
Eye candy. That's all she's for.
Well, I mean, it's weird because he wanted to have her there, right? And now that she's there, anything that she says to him, he's like, oh, you Vulcans you're not interested in anything and you have an answer for everything and blah, blah,
you don't
blah,
want
blah,
us
blah.
To do this. I see. Yeah, kind of thing. Yeah. Just way too dismissive.
Yeah. I feel like it'd be great to have that play back and forth if it was way toned down from that to have a discussion about it rather than just a,
I think I'm right. Yeah. I had written down Archer's lackadaisy attitude. He was just like, oh.
I thought he took the whole aliens on the other ship dying a little too personal. It's like, okay, you got there. They're having something sucked out of them. All right, that didn't work. Let's move on. Why, you know, the whole emotional attachment of what if they were Vulcans? Would you?
Well, I think the idea was to show that he was, as humans, we were trying to lay down our code of ethics on other people, which we got to learn not to, you know, to a large degree. And I think that's what the whole point was he was trying to put, his Earth's values on other races when probably shouldn't have. So
it's
much.
Sort of a riff on the same thing that happened to Trip on the planet with the mother and the child.
Yeah, where she was weaning him off of the methane or whatever it was. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant when he was given birth. That's another episode.
Yeah.
Hold on.
yes, we'll get to that later, as late as possible. But anyway, and in the first episode, I also thought it was amusing that Bonnie said, I think that's a banana slug. And why I know that a banana slug is, I don't know, but I looked
pretty
up
much. And, yep, well, because they're really big and usually colorful.
Yes.
Tasty.
Sato really came off as very, very whiny in this episode. Now, I understood that she was having problems, that she felt like basically she had a case of imposter syndrome in a lot of ways about this, that I shouldn't be here. There should be somebody else. I'm not capable of this, but my cabin's facing the wrong way. You know, I get claustrophobic in the suit.
Searching for excuses.
You know, it's really coming across as, you don't have a lot of sympathy for her. You got to build that sympathy up at some point. You know?
I had written down Hoshi's performance anxiety because I think it was just a little too much for her, and she had to learn to chill out a little bit.
I'm going to jump right to the end and say, what are you doing leaving an invasive species on another planet?
That's what I wrote down.
Like, that was, have we not learned anything?
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm pointing at my notes if you wonder what I'm pointing at in the video. Yeah, that's exactly what I wrote. Foxes weren't getting a new home.
A Picard facepalm moment at that point. Go, what? They didn't just do that.
Yeah. Why don't they just eject it into space, let it freeze? And
yeah, we'll space sluggo, and that'll, you know,
feed it to Phlox's bat like he suggested. We can always feed it to my bat.
It's a bizarre question. They brought it on board the ship. What were they intending to do?
Well, and they said we could always leave it, stop at the next argon-rich atmosphere planet, and that's not where they left it, in an argon-rich environment.
Not like, unless the doctor and Sato can suddenly breathe that.
Yeah.
I would have loved it when, when Hoshi gets up and they start to walk away and Phlox reaches back and grabs it and puts it in his pocket.
But the camera was already off.
That's right.
You gonna eat that?
No, he doesn't put it in his pocket. He's going,
tosses it in there, catches it.
Delightful.
Tastes like chicken.
So yeah, I also thought that the doctor, you know, Phlox being a different species, it's interesting to watch him because he just has this observing everything from afar attitude, except we get that turn when he gives the wrong diagnosis to the crewman, you know, they bring back from the planet. And then he's like all 12 types of upset about that. And I don't know how to take that. I mean, he's almost had this just observer from the outside.
Kid-like observant. Yeah.
The couple over there is preparing to mate. Do you think they'll let me watch? You're enjoying this, aren't you? Says Trip.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, I like Dr. Phlox for his attitude, or he's wanting to just experience everything. But yeah, that was a kind of a turn for him. But he's a doctor. He's supposed to do the right thing.
Be inquisitive. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And he tried to, in effect, counsel Sato about.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this thing about, well, I want to leave. And
you can always go back to teaching.
Yeah.
With Sluggo.
I made note here that one of the things I liked in the first episode was that the shuttle pod lands, and this is in quotes because it's space, upside down.
Yes.
And you don't often see that. No. You know, you would be used to the shuttle landing like there's a side hatch or something.
They've shown like Voyager stays on its side relative to the screen anyway, on when they dock with a station or a ship or something. So, I mean, yeah, they are experimenting once in a while with different perspectives. The part that confused me was they were climbing up out of the shuttle, which meant they would have been climbing down the ladder, and suddenly they were on their feet, but they never turned around. Nobody ever did.
Right.
And then Reed was more than happy to default to blowing the hatch.
Yeah.
As well as bringing over what was like 12 rifles per person on the, you know, on the ship with them.
It's just a precaution, Captain.
Right.
Yeah. So Reed is becoming this, well, you know, I think we all have knowledge about Reed as the series goes along, but he's already coming off as weird and like, what is going on with this guy?
Mm-hmm.
And
they do answer some of that later on.
Yeah, but it's just, it feels very off.
It looks like he's itching to kill somebody.
Well, you got to remember this is still early in season one, so I don't know if all the actors have found the character's footing quite yet. So we're going to see some rough spots.
Yeah. Right. You know, in Strange New World, I noticed that we got to see a little lower deck action going on because they had some lower tier characters going, oh, right, we get to see a planet. What do you think? You know, I thought that was interesting that we got to see that kind of perspective again, even though we saw it on TNG. We saw it on, of course, the show Lower Decks. I just thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah. And I think that you should have a lot of that because it's very close quarters. You're going to run into these people all the time. You should be meeting a lot of those crewman. I mean, it's a relatively small ship. I don't know what the compliment is on it. I should like look that up at some point.
Yeah, the bridge crew's like, wow, I haven't walked around the ship in like 2 weeks. I've been up here all day.
Let's go meet somebody. I thought I recognized crewman Elizabeth Cutler, the woman who was on the landing party. We never really see much of her again. But I thought I recognized her from another show, but I couldn't place it. So I went to IMDb. The actress's name is Kelly Waymire. And this show was aired in 2001. She passed away in 2003 at the age of 36. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Wow. You
know, sad, but fascinating that she's just got one of those faces that you swear you've seen before. At least that went through my mind.
Yeah, she looked familiar to me as well, so I'm not sure what to make of
it. But she was on an episode of, was it Voyager?
Oh.
Or DS9. She was on another episode of Star Trek, but I couldn't find the episode quick enough to go rewatch it.
So one thing I noticed in this episode was, and I put down at the 10-minute mark of, I believe it's Fight or Flight, that we have a shot that lasts just maybe 2 or 3 seconds. I don't know if it is, but I think what we saw there was the first time we have ever seen the screen that's inside that viewer at the science station.
Oh, right.
We never saw it on the original series. You see the light shining up into a person's face, but we've never actually seen the screen. And this was showing a tactical type of display, and then we just cut away from it. And I thought, well, that's...
I didn't even think about that. Yeah,
I don't know how to check for that, but it just seemed to me that was the first time that ever
happened. Google search.
There was another interesting... I don't know if this was intentional bad editing or what happened on Fight or Flight, but the shuttle pod is coming back, and they extend the docking arm, and they're being pulled into the ship. But then there's some shots on Enterprise by the big bad other ship, suddenly it's detached and needs to be reattached to the docking arm and gets pulled in really fast at that point.
Like, right.
That just seemed like a little bit of crazy editing to me.
The reboot. They rebooted it.
It seemed odd that they're about to be fired on and you can retract it quickly.
Yeah.
Why were you retracting it slowly?
Yeah.
Plot device.
Well, there is that.
Yeah. Hey, I did also made note that Strange New World was yet another incident of camping in Star Trek.
It goes, well, no one's singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat, at least.
And making marshmallows.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And when Tucker and his bug in his sleeping bag, I thought that was funny.
Yeah. That's something a lot of people can relate to. You know, it was just a big old creepy, you know, scorpion type bug.
I thought there wasn't supposed to be any life on that planet.
No intelligent life.
Really? They said intelligent?
Yeah.
I think they did, because it'd be hard to have an ecosystem without any life at all.
That's true.
Plant life, but yeah, it didn't really specify what type of life they found, but they just said doesn't appear to be any, well, any humanoid life or something. They did make
maybe qualifier on that.
Yeah.
And we got sort of an answer. Or maybe it's a question. So I'll pose the question to you guys. Is Porthos getting enough cheese?
Where are they getting the cheese?
They pack it. They brought it. I don't remember Porthos being so small. He's a little dog.
Yeah. He's trained very well. I see him walking around with the Archer, like back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, he was probably... They've probably done the scene enough times going, if I do this, there's food. I'm just going to follow that guy around.
Yeah. He catches that last chunk of cheese right out of the air.
Yeah, screw my trainer. I want this guy.
he just coughs up some actual language. We need to do the scene again.
Yeah.
More cheese.
And the species that we meet in the episode with the derelict is the people of the Axanar.
Yes, so I thought that was interesting. It's like we made friends with the Axanar. I was like, what did he just say?
Yeah.
I thought they were banned.
So there's gonna be a battle on your planet that someday things will not go well.
We can only show you on camera. Issues. You can only have a maximum of 15 minutes on camera.
Yeah, that's right.
No. Is that how it works? I forgot. They had some contract against the Axanar.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it becomes a bit of a running thing. If I recall correctly, the squeaking and the deck plating in Archer's.
Yeah, because he's like, do you hear that? Yeah, he's done that a lot.
Yeah. So I think that this, because it, I was looking at it as, man, this is how bored you are on the ship. You're listening for squeaks.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you remember back to TNG, Captain Picard was said, you know, are the something something out of alignment? And I think it was Geordi says, yeah, 0.12. And he says, when I was on board the Stargazer or whatever it was, I could feel the 0.4 variance. So, I mean, captains know their ships. That was what it spoke to me about. It's like, if something's out of whack, captain is probably going to know about it first.
Or he's got a little OCD going on.
Yeah. One or the other.
If that's the case, don't give your dog cheese.
That's right. Or both. Yeah.
And we talked about this earlier about how Archer goes off about leaving the ship and leaving the crew behind when they're having dinner. I thought it was a really well done scene. You can argue with why is Archer so upset about it? But that kind of tension that was there between Archer, who's sitting in the middle, and Trip and T'Pol, who essentially are trying to not ruffle feathers and just kind of say other things. And
Trip came across a little clueless on that one. I don't know if he was privy to the whole what was going on with Archer, because he was trying to make conversation. It didn't feel like he was avoiding at that point. It just felt like he didn't want to. He didn't quite understand there was some friction going on.
I think what he was trying to do was he knew that Archer was not happy with the way things went down, and so he's just trying to go, oh, else. I heard the different people and blah, blah, blah. Just kind of like, let's do light chatter about this type of thing. And, oh, I saw that nova from an observatory on Earth and blah, blah, blah. Just yeah. kind of getting, you know, let's not make waves here at this point.
The inner director in me would have put Trip in the middle. But,
That's okay, just, I can see why.
And he was for a lot of the dinners. He was kind of like was like that.
Yeah, but I felt like they were both walking on eggshells around Archer, and he was just getting more and more agitated no matter what they did. You know, answering with shorter replies, not answering at all, and just kind of. Oh, what would you have done? Blah, 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 blah.
We Vulcans would never have gone down to the planet in the first, or gone over to the ship in the first place.
So we can argue about whether or not his response to what was going on was over the top or not, but I just thought it was a well-staged scene for that one. In two episodes that really were full mostly of who are these people? I mean, that's really, I think the majority of these episodes is just so you can get an idea of who this crew is.
And personal, interpersonal relationships with them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right. So it's time to rate these two episodes.
What are we doing? 1 to 10 slugs?
Yeah, we'll do 1 to 10 sluggos.
Yeah.
For our first episode. Fight or Flight. I'm getting myself confused here. So let's start with Chuck on this one.
I generally liked it. I do go back and watch the episodes twice, usually one right after we do this show. So this weekend I'll go watch our next two, and then closer, like Tuesday or Wednesday, right before we record, I'll watch them again. So I did enjoy this one. The, like you said, the interactions were good. Although there was nothing that really made me go, wow, this is top-notch stuff. I'm going to give this a 7 of 10, not 7 of 9.
Yes.
Right.
Understood. How about you, Craig? What do you say?
For Fight or Flight, I'm probably going to agree with that 7. I'm going to say 7 also. Like I said, I liked... Hoshi's anxiety performance, you know, performance anxiety a little bit, where she was trying to figure things out. And although I think Archer should have come to terms with leaving well enough alone rather than trying to apply his sense of morality on everything. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I would give that one a 7.
Okay. And I am actually going to... go right along with you guys on that one, a 7. I felt like it had interesting aspects to it. I've identified some of the things that I thought were problems with the episode, but that I really think you need to have a bit more sympathy with Hoshi Sato before, you know, and they just kind of made her seem a bit whiny to start off with. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, you know, well, she deserved a bit better than that for what the lead up was to her problem. But overall, I think a good episode.
I think that's the first time all three of us had the same score.
Indeed. Yeah,
that's right.
This is very strange. All right. Now we have Strange New World. Ooh, we got to come up with a rating system for this one. Just ghosts or rock people or
pollen.
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 1 to 10 pollen.
They all got allergies.
Okay, 1 to 10 pollen. That's a new one.
The pollen count.
The pollen count is high because it's a 7 out of 10 or something like that. All right. Let's see. For me, we'll go backwards here. I'm gonna give this one. I felt like we spent a lot of time on this one to get to the meat of it. There was a lot of slow pacing at the very beginning of this episode. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was meant to counteract, you know, to be counterpoint to what happens later in the episode, but I felt like it was really dragging at the beginning. So I'm going to give this one a 6. And what about you, Craig?
I did like that they actually used the transporter for the first time.
Yeah, with some degree of success. They got Archer that first time. They used it on one of the first two. They had that emergency.
They're still in, a little trepidation right. about they using the crewman
and a bunch of stuff.
I mean, and he got the stuff implanted on him. So not necessarily the first time they used it for war people, but yeah, the way it worked out, it's like, whoa. Anyway, I thought that was interesting, but I didn't like Archer's way lackadaisy attitude with T'Pol and, throwing caution in the wind. Let's just camp, whatever. We're running late. How about that? Yeah. I'm like,
sorry, Lord, lost man. Track of time.
Yeah, you're the captain, huh?
Yeah, don't you have watches in the future?
Porthos was getting rid of his cheese.
That's right.
I did like Tripp's line, where no dog has gone before.
Yeah, that's right. But I did like the little standoff at the end and how everything sort of deteriorate. The pacing on that part, I think, worked out. But the beginning, you're right. So I'm probably going to go with you and do a 6.5. On that as well.
Okay. And what say you, Chuck?
I'm going a half point in the other direction. I thought I mentioned that I always watch these twice. I didn't get through this one. It was just too slow. Mm-hmm. It was like, mm-hmm. oh man, it felt like it should have been a 30-minute show. And I'm going to counter that with
a sitcom. Yeah,
it felt like even when they started having hallucinations, it took a long time for them to figure out, these are hallucinations. In fact, they didn't even figure it out. Right. It was just...
They're told and they don't believe it.
Yeah, it just... They labored on that for too long, in my opinion. I was like, I didn't even get that far into the second running. It was like, Mayweather saw something outside the cave. Here we go. So, no, I'm going to give this a 5.5. It was intriguing. There were some points to it, like... Stop. You should really listen to T'Pol once in a while, or at least say, I'll take that under consideration.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
Tripp had a camera, by the way.
Yeah, he did. And it looked somewhat modern.
But modern for then or modern for now?
Well, modern. Well, it was a little big for now.
You
look at the Doctor's Hollow projector emitter camera, though, but that looks like one of those old Sony Mavica things with these two hands with. But
yeah, one of those cameras you put a CD-ROM in.
But hey, I don't know what a holographic camera looks like in the future, but his digital camera that he had looked pretty. How did we get down this trail? Anyway,
I don't know.
I got a picture of, I grab a few screenshots so I can remember stuff, but I was just thinking, actually, one thing, in Star Trek, which I know back then that they didn't really, they've done some forward thinking things, technology wise, but as far as taking pictures, like now I got a little tiny device that does phone calls and everything else and camera has a great camera and everything. And back then it's like, they didn't go, I can just take a picture of this and I'll show Scotty or whatever,
I think we talked about this. Was it this show or maybe it was somebody else's podcast came up and said, when they would have something on one of their pads, they would hand them multiple pads. Like given you the complete works of Dickens. And here's another pad full of the complete works of Tolstoy and the complete works. And it's like, in fact, when they were archiving something on Voyager, or going through the archives, they had a box of pads. Really? Hook this up to Wi-Fi and put it in the computer banks on the ship. And I only need, when you have multiple books, do you carry around multiple devices? No.
To me, it's the,
they didn't quite get the storage thing down.
Yeah. No, to me, it's sometimes, and we've had this discussion where sometimes it's hard to tell, what are they doing that they know is incorrect, but that they're doing it so that they're telegraphing to the audience, say in the case of the bunch of pads, this is a lot of
information.
If you hand them one thing and say it's this, that doesn't mean as much as if you give the person
I guess on camera, to watch somebody go swipe, swipe, swipe. In fact, swiping wasn't even around in 2000, in the 90s when these shows were being built. It just wouldn't be as dramatic to go swipe, swipe, swipe. Wow, this is a lot of information.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So, you know, it's, you can't always tell if that was their intent, but I think better to show.
You could show them, hand them the phone and say, here's a little information. Hand them the iPad. Here's a lot of information. See how much information this big device holds.
And then hand them the desktop and say, and this information is turned off at the moment because I forgot to plug it in. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Just, so that's
just download an app from the onboard ship app store.
Do you think they fly around with a Google Play Store on board?
The Enterprise App Store, you know. All right. Well, that one we kind of averaged out in the middle there with a 6.5, 6 and a 5.5. Interesting. Okay. It's time to come back from our main mission with an appropriate sound effect. And time to head out. Well, not head out, head over to. We're going to head over right over there. Over there is our Warp Speed Roundtable. So let's take a walk over there. Come on along with us.
It's just past the Atavacron on the left.
Oh, well, that explains it. All right. Last time around, we asked, which ship's doctor is your favorite? And we got a message from Ken, who posted over on Facebook, that McCoy is his favorite doctor. And that's, McCoy is always a good bet for a doctor. And didn't specify which McCoy, so we'll just say generically Leonard McCoy. But this time around, we've got a question about...
Wait, which Leonard McCoy?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Carl Urban McCoy?
Well, that's what I just said. I said, well, we don't know, so we'll just say...
He had D-E in parentheses on the message.
Oh, D. All right, so...
Oh, there we go. Okay.
I assume he's talking
the
about...
The real thing. McCoy. Ah, see what I did there.
Oh, boy.
Enjoy the show, people.
I was hanging right out there. You guys totally missed it.
We're here all week. Anyway... This time around.
Yeah. Would have been funny if you said it.
Well, yes, of course it would have been. I'm glad we all agree on that point. Ow!
In your mind.
Given that it's surely the most Star Trek movie that was not a Star Trek movie, and based on our story from the beginning of here in Subspace Chatter, remember way back at the beginning of the episode? The question is, are you excited for a Galaxy Quest revival? Now, we don't know in what form it would be.
I know Craig's answer.
It's a reboot. They're not redoing the movie, probably. If this is for a television series, could be the same premise that Amazon was going to do. Could be something else. But are you excited for a Galaxy Quest revival? I will start with Craig on that one.
No, not at all. Just kidding. Yes, I am. Actually, I am because... I like Simon Pegg. I think he would, he could put the, his best foot forward. Cause I thought he did a good job with the Star Trek, when he was in the writing for, you know, for movies. So I think it could be good. If, you know, there's a lot of ways they could take this. So yeah, I think it'd be good.
Okay. All right. I'm going to chime in next and I'm going to say that I'm tentative on it because Galaxy Quest was a surprise slash lightning in a bottle.
Yep.
Slash,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's a twist about what happens. And now that, unless you've got another twist to throw at it, you've established all the things that can, that are, that the crew knows that they are on a television show, that the fans know that it's real. And so you all the players are already, all the pieces, the cards are on the table.
Our civilization does not need saving more than once.
So I won't say that I'm not excited for it, but I can't quite commit myself. Yeah, I'm really psyched about it. It really is a very much a wait and see attitude for me on it. I hope for the best, but I'm really nervous about.
Well, I'm kind of in that boat a little bit, but yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what Simon Pegg pulls out. That's what I was getting at.
Okay. And what about you, Chuck?
I'm with you, Clinton. Feels kind of like a money grab, but if there's a good idea that can back it up, I'm cautiously optimistic.
I have a theory.
Yes.
You want to hear it?
Sure.
All right. So, you know, last time, they made
Simon,
the show.
Simon, close your ears. Go la, 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 la.
Yeah. So they made the show. And then it turned out it eventually was made kind of real because the aliens were watching the historic documents. And then I wonder if the show was made by producers that had come from space and had those experiences and made a show for Earth. So.
I see.
Hmm.
Very circular.
So this circular. It is historical documents.
Or they could fly off to Omicron Persei 8 because they're still getting our TV shows too.
So anyway, I thought that would be an interesting twist if the stories were written by people who actually had those experiences.
I see. Okay. Based on ripped from today's headlines, if you're from, you know, Omicron City 3.
That's right.
Bring me the young lawyer with a short skirt.
So, what do you people think out there? You, dear listener, do you feel like you're really psyched to have more Galaxy Quest, whatever form that might take? Potentially another a television series, probably short form. I would imagine that the way things go these days, probably a 10 episode series or something.
Maybe like it's
that.
Another one of those 15 minute things like Short Treks.
Ah, I see. Let us know what you think. We will post over in the Facebook forum the question, but if you want to comment on it like Ken did, just leave us a note and let us know what you think. All right, that said, it is time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here.
Let's wrap this up, shall we?
Exactly, Sir Patrick. He was very, very excited about the new Galaxy Quest series, by the way, because he's hoping he can be on it. But anyway.
He's wanting to go watch it. That's why he's wanting to
hurry up. Are we going to play that game again? Who's going to be on the new Galaxy Quest?
Ooh, we could do that. We could do that.
Save it for the topic is Galaxy Quest.
Okay, all right. That's it. Coming this fall.
We have to start a new podcast. Lord help me. I only do that every time I write a Podcasting for Dummies book, so please no.
No, this will be this podcast, but we'll find out it was really secretly a Galaxy Quest podcast.
Anyway, someone's been really listening to this podcast and thinks it's real life.
I feel sorry for them Nobody. So much. All right. You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4.com. You can find me also on Facebook and Twitter and MeWe and Instagram. And I don't know, the back of a milk carton, and I'm very concerned about that. So anyway, who speaks for you guys?
Go ahead, Craig.
Okay, so if you want to find us and our shenanigans, go look for Technorama Podcast in Google or any other search engine of your choice, and you should find us. And our main website is at chuckchat.com, and you can find actually all the shows that were on there. So, yep, even some old ones.
So you can find shenanigans and malarkey and all sorts of things going on over there.
And hoopla.
It's a whole hullabaloo of things going on.
Cornucopia of nonsense.
That's right.
Oh, before we have to break out the thesaurus, it's time to hit the theme, boys.
The thesaurus went extinct 65 million years ago.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't
put on
the red shirt.
Shirt.
Sluggo.
Grapthar's Hammer, what a podcast.